There we go. Okay, so welcome to Advancing Advocacy, and our guest tonight is Janice Bellucci from California, who's going to be talking to us about ways to block bad bills. But to get started, this is Brenda Jones with National RSOL, and in addition to just welcoming everybody, I wanted to first ask for a virtual show of hands, and you can do a virtual show of hands by pressing *6. And what I wanted to ask first off, and again, Jennifer, I don't know if you can do this remotely. You may have to find a way to hide your screen so that you can see the wall, but we can't. I think you can do that from your preferences or somewhere up there. Anyway, what I was going to ask first off is if we could get a show of hands of how many people have ever contacted their legislator, and by pressing *6, we can just get a quick count, and then we'll kind of clear the queue. So we're not asking you to speak, just to kind of vote, like I say, a virtual raising of hands. So if you've ever contacted a legislator, say by email or mail or by phone, just raise your hand with a *6, and Jennifer will let me know how many people have said yes to that.
Well, I'm showing about 5, Brenda, but I'm not sure I'm seeing them all.
There should be a place where you would actually see the queue.
I'm looking at that on the wall, but I see 1, mm-hmm. 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yep. Okay. So then just clear the queue, which is there at the top. Yeah. The next question is then when we've had some people that have. Up at the top right, there's a button that says clear. There we go. So, next question is, how many have actually gone and in person spoken to a legislator, say in person, especially like, I guess I should say one-on-one, that might have talked to your personal lawmaker or a member of a committee? So just a quick show of hands with *6 for that. How many have talked to your legislator or some legislators that way? Any more? So we've got a few. So we're looking at, 5 or 6.
Yes, 6. Yes,
5 or 6 with that. Okay, and then finally, you can clear the queue again. And then the last question is just how many folks have gone and testified at a public hearing where you might be testifying for or against, usually against, unfortunately, a piece of legislation during your session. So *6 again for that. And for those of you who might be, when you're calling in, I think you can press *6 if you've actually used your, if you're using the program. You can also get to *6. There's a little keypad that you can see over on your, on the side. It's just a little 9 squares. If you click on that, you can actually press *6 on that as well. So just a few doing that. So we've got a lot of folks. We've got, over 40 people on the call right now. And thank you, Jennifer. We got about 40 people on the call right now. Just a few of us have actually done that. I think Jennifer and I can count our names in that. And I don't know, Janice, if you actually went ahead and pressed *6 or if you were just watching what everybody else did. But the three of us, I know, have all done some testifying. So one of the things I did want to mention before Janice starts is just very briefly that, you know, what she'll be telling us tonight, I'm sure will be applicable in every state. But to keep in mind that your actual experience and in your state will be probably a little different, because every state is a little bit different. In my state, for instance, we have a part-time legislature. It only meets for about 3 months, roughly, and they do have some paid staff that assists them here, and two chambers. There are other states that meet for a shorter period of time or a longer period of time. In California, it's a year-round legislature, and I believe, Janice, correct me if I'm wrong, I think they're paid working year-round.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, so they're a full-time paid legislature. Ours are paid here in Maryland, are paid a small amount, you know, kind of a per diem thing. In some states, they aren't paid anything at all. In many states, in fact, there's other than possibly some reimbursement of costs, they don't have any staff. So just that alone can make a big difference in how the legislatures are going to work. All of them will have some similar process in terms of you know, a citizen will come and approach a lawmaker. The lawmaker will has to agree to introduce the legislation. Then it moves through a process that might go from that initial chamber to be passed, moves over to the other chamber, has to be passed there. And in each of those chambers, assuming you have two chambers, the public is given the opportunity to speak out about the bill, and you have to know about it, so you have to be paying attention. You have to find out, as Jennifer mentioned shortly before the call, you have to know that a hearing's happening, and then you have to be willing to actually show up and speak and find out what the rules are about speaking. Again, in my state, anybody can show up and testify, but they do have to be there at least 45 minutes in advance to actually sign up on a little sheet and indicate whether they're for or against. So, you know, if you just walk in the door at the last minute, you're out of luck. You know, so those are little details that you have to find out. So I just kind of want to mention that, you know, all of this will be helpful, I hope, in no matter where you are, and to give you some confidence and some planning. But just keep in mind that each state's going to be a little bit different too. So I'm sure that Janice will address that. So now Janice is specifically, you know, she's been working with California RSOL, and we mostly have heard from her in terms of her legal exploits there and the different things that she has been challenging, especially in terms of proximity and now residency restrictions. But she's here today with her lobbyist hat on. She has experience with that going way back, and has done some work even at the national level prior to getting involved in this cause. And this past year had some good luck with and not just luck, which is what we'll hear, with the legislature, with some nasty bills. So with that, I will hand it over to you, Janice, and tell us what you need to know, want us to know.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brenda, very much. Yes, I think, as Brenda said, I think most of you all know me as the founder and president of California RSOL, if not as an attorney. And but what you may not know that I also am a former congressional staffer in the House of Representatives, and I was a registered lobbyist after that. So I have a very checkered past, some people would say, but it's all coming in very handy with the work that I'm doing, certainly here in California, on behalf of registered citizens. So because, indeed, there are a lot of people on the line tonight that have very little experience in lobbying, I'm glad that I'm making a presentation along these lines. I'm going to really want to give you all some nuts and bolts about how to lobby. and things to think about. I'm not going to talk about the substance of our message because I figure we all know what that is. And also that message will be different from state to state. So, Brenda, why don't you go ahead, I'm sorry, Jennifer, and to the next slide. So it's really important for us when we're lobbying to communicate effectively with our elected officials. They are, in fact, the ones who get to vote on things, and we can go and explain ourselves kind of till the cows come home, but we don't get a vote. So we get to vote for the elected officials, but after that, then it's up to them to do the right thing. So what I wanted to So my next chart here is the reasons to lobby, and there's really two basic reasons. One is because you have a policy issue, and the other one is because you have a funding issue. And so there's different ways that states refer to these and different ways that Congress refers to them. So sometimes you might hear that there's an authorization bill, and when you hear that term, please know it's a policy bill, and then when you hear the term appropriations, just know they're talking about money. And so there are different committees and different members of the state legislature and the Congress who deal with these different issues, or depending on what hat they're wearing that day. So, you know, if you have somebody, for example, you know, in our California State Senate, we have 40 members of our state Senate. Well, one day, we've got so many different committees, so one day they might actually be working on a policy issue, and let's just say it's a policy issue dealing with public safety, and the next day they may be dealing with an appropriations issue that has to do, you know, with child care and nothing at all that has anything to do with public safety. So you need to approach people in the right way and wearing the right hat, and also in states like California that has paid staff, they have staffers for different reasons. So in other words, there will be some staffers who are working on policy issues. There will be other staffers who are working on funding issues. So next chart, please. I call this the trifecta because so many people don't understand who they really want to meet with. And I know it always seems attractive to go in and meet with an elected official, right? But you want to meet with the right elected official, as I mentioned just a few minutes ago. And yet meeting with the elected official alone, quite frankly, is a courtesy call. Okay, so if you happen to be a constituent and you're in Joe Blow or Jane Blow's district and you go in for a meeting with them, if there's no staffer in the room, you're having a courtesy, it's a courtesy call. And that means the elected official is there to shake your hand, but quite frankly, they're probably not there to listen. And I know that might be hard to understand or grasp, but trust me, it is true, because elected officials have so many issues coming at them, they can't possibly keep track of them all. And I don't know if there is some small state out there that doesn't have paid legislators and they don't have paid staff. I don't know how anybody gets any work done, quite frankly. But anyway, a state like California, again, we have really a year-long legislature, and then we have paid staff. And so you want to make sure the best meeting is with the elected official and with the correct staff member. So in other words, if you're there to talk about public safety, that you have the public safety in the room. That staffer, by the way, is going to be the continuity. So the elected official, again, happy to see you, shake your hand, gosh gee whiz, we'll share pleasantries with you. You probably won't get too much of his or her time. 10 or 15 minutes is pretty much the norm these days, unless you are, you know, a major donor, in which case then they'll have dinner with you. But the fact is that for us doing grassroots lobbying, the fact if we can get a 10 or 15 minute with an elected official and staff, that's great. Also, don't be hesitant and don't be upset at all if you have a meeting with just a staffer, provided that it's the right staffer. So if you know, the same person who answered the telephone is taking a meeting, it's really not the right staffer. That's a receptionist. And sometimes they do take meetings, and sometimes it's because they want to be more than a receptionist. But the fact is, if they're answering the phones, chances are they're not the right staffer for you to be talking to. And, okay, so this idea of the trifecta, though, is that okay, if you have the elected official, okay, that has the right committee assignments, and you are a constituent, right, and you're meeting with that elected official and a staffer, that's the trifecta. That's the best meeting that you can have. Being a constituent will get the attention of the elected official because that person's afraid, oh, my gosh, if I don't talk to Sally or Joe, they may not vote for me next time. So they will give you a meeting. And in one of our future slides here, definitely I'm going to tell you to arrange a meeting ahead of time if that's at all possible. But having a meeting like this is a great meeting, and it will have maximum impact. Okay, the next slide. I wanted to share with you what the other person is thinking, the person who you're meeting with. And this is whether it's the elected official or whether it's the staffer. The fact is they're pressed for time. They're in meetings all day long. Either that or they're in hearings or they're going to vote if it's the elected official. These folks in general are overwhelmed. Okay, they keep getting information thrown at them. I know when I was a congressional staffer, I had meetings probably 8 hours a day and with different groups of people, and I had them constantly dumping data on my head. And it was virtually impossible to keep up with it. And I'll tell you a little bit more about how they view what you say. But know, too, that the member and or the staffer can't be an expert on every topic. And that, again, might be surprising to you, but you might be meeting with somebody on a public safety issue, and they've never, they're new to the public safety committee, and they're not so sure what the heck they've just gotten themselves into. Or, like in California, people, usually junior members of our assembly and Senate, get put on the public safety committee, so they're pretty new to the legislative process. And quite often they have really big eyes, kind of like deer in the headlights, right? And they're wondering, oh, my goodness, what am I supposed to be doing here? So, but eventually, they catch on to it. And, again, don't expect them to be an expert. When you go in to talk to them about our issues, you're the subject matter expert, not them. Now, in California, our situation is such that we have members, our elected officials, actually have term limits, and the staff does not. So quite often we will have a seasoned staffer with a new or almost new elected official. And so sometimes we will see a staffer, in one office for several years, and then that member is either termed out or goes from our assembly to the Senate or vice versa, and anyway, departs or retires. And then the fact is that you're meeting with the same staffer but in a different office. So that's an interesting situation in California. And again, like we have committee staff who've been on that committee for over 20 years, and our term limits are 12 years now. So there's not going to be any elected official with 20 years of experience, but you've got staff that has 20 years of experience. Okay, and the last point on that slide is important, too, about the person you're meeting with may not care about our issue, and guess what? They also might be opposed. So I've had some pretty interesting things said to me, to my face, and I'll share one with you, that there's a woman elected official, female member of our state assembly, and when I was meeting with her chief of staff and bringing her a government report, an excerpt from a government report, I had a staffer tell me that I was lying. And, I mean, it's in black and white. It's right there. There's no way that it's not even ambiguous. It was a statistic. 1.8% of registered citizens on parole reoffend, commit a second sex offense. And she didn't believe me. Well, this report was over 100 pages long, and there's no way that we were going to copy all 100 pages. So I invited her as calmly as possible to go read the full report. But anyway, we had the cover page of the report, and we had the specific page that information was on, and she still didn't believe me. So just know, sometimes you're going to go into a hostile meeting. I had another one where this was with the elected official and the appropriate staffer, so it was going to be, the meeting with the right people, and went in there, and the member said, the elected official said, "You're brave to come into my office." And I already knew her background, so that didn't throw me. And it is really important, by the way, for you to get as much background information about an elected official as possible, especially something that is specific to the person you're going to be meeting with, because in that case, I knew that when she was the mayor of a city, that she was responsible for an anti, you know, sex offender ordinance being passed in that city. And so that's why she said what she did. And I have to tell you that it was with some glee that that city was the first one that I sued for presence restrictions. And basically, we got rid of that ordinance that she was responsible for. So anyway, just know when you go in there, keep a smile on your face, and don't take it personally. Next slide, please. Okay, how to be heard is really important, because remember, they're getting deluged with information day in and day out. How can your message actually sink in? And believe it or not, one of the most important things to do is to have a one-page point paper, or here I call it a summary of the issue. A lot of people fight this, and I'm going to tell you it's a losing battle. You have to be able to boil down your message to one page. And why that is, again, because people are being deluged with information all day long, day in, day out. And if you plop a 100-page report on their desk, remember I just talked a few minutes ago about having a government report that was over 100 pages long, there's no way in heck I'm going to plop that on somebody's desk. It's a waste of paper. It's a waste of time. They're not going to read it. So instead what I did was I took out the one page from that report that I wanted them to pay attention to, and I gave them a copy of the cover page so that they could see what that report was, so they could go back and look. And by the way, that was not my one-page summary. That was the second point about additional backup information. So when I'm going to say something as controversial as the rate of reoffense for someone on the registry while on parole is 1.8%, I know they're not going to believe me. So I've got to have backup, and I brought in that government report, an excerpt from the government report. So let's go back to the one-page summary, though. You need to identify what the issue is, and if it, in fact, is something like in California, our issue is trying to create a tiered registry, the positive thing we're trying to do through legislation, and that's what it says at the top of the page, you know, reasons to support a tiered registry. And then the background, while these are all the reasons why a tiered registry is a good idea, I won't go into those, right? What's the current status? Is there a bill pending or not? Okay. And if there is a bill pending, what's the bill number? Okay. Don't leave it to them to guess. They can very easily pull up on their computer the bill and also the history of the bill if you give them a bill number. But if you don't give them a bill number, there's a good chance they're not even going to bother to look for it. Then you want to ask them, what specifically do you want them to do about this? Just saying, oh, there's a bill out there, and then talk about the weather, it doesn't work. It's a waste of your time, and it's a waste of their time. What you want to say is, I want you to support this bill, or I want you to oppose this bill. It gets down to that, okay? And if you give them any more information than that, you might confuse them. So don't say, we kind of like this bill, but it's either we want you to support or we want you to oppose. Because at some point in time, they're going to be asked to vote on this bill. And you want to tell them specifically how to vote. You're voting yes or you're voting no. And then the last point there, give them your contact information because you want them to call you back. I always tell people when I meet with them is consider me a subject matter expert. And again, most of the folks in their personal offices don't have a subject matter expert. And what I mean by that is they might have somebody who knows public safety, but they don't necessarily have somebody who knows about sex offender laws and the history of our sex offender registry in California. Ours came from 1947, and I know how it morphed from, you know, just focusing on gay men to broader and from going from just the city of Los Angeles to going statewide. I know that information, and so the So I tell them, I'm a subject matter expert. Here's my contact information. If nothing else, keep my card or keep my one pager so you will contact me in the future if you have a question. And by the way, it's the biggest wonderful positive thing to happen when they do that, because then you know they do consider you to be a subject matter expert. As far as other additional backup information, you can bring it, but I wouldn't thrust it upon them unless they ask for it. Or you can say, when they might express an interest in a certain point that you're making, you see their eyes light up and say, well, we have more information about that with us today. Would you like to see it? I mean, asking such a basic question is actually a good idea. And either they'll say yes or they'll say no. We have one member of our assembly, so again, we have two houses in California, and our assembly, who's the chairman of our public safety committee, which is a very important committee, it deals with all of our bills. They always get sent to that committee for consideration. And he happens to be a scientist who loves to read stuff. And he will read cases, and he will read law review articles, and he will read 100-page reports. He's our exception, and he just says, just throw it at me. I think the man doesn't sleep much at night because he's just like the sponge, and we can send him information, and he will read it, and he's a thoughtful person. So it doesn't mean that he always agrees with us, but at least we know he's somebody who will pay attention to the facts and not react from emotion. Okay, next chart, please. Some other tips here about how to be heard. Isn't that to make it personal, okay? And as I said a little bit earlier, but it bears repeating, research this person you're going to be meeting with. You know, what did they do? Were they on the city council? Were they on the school board? You know, what bills have they introduced and supported in the past? Almost all this information is available online today. It's fantastic, the Internet, how much information you can find out about somebody. So, you know, if you, for example, you find out that what they really care about is education, right, and you're coming in to talk about public safety and talk about, you know, a sex offender issue, then tailor it to them and say, look, Pete, the public needs to be educated about this issue. And that will really make a big difference with the elected official that you meet with and or his or her staff, you know, and say, you know, in other words, you're sending the message, this should be important to you because, or I understand, I recognize that you care about education, so let me tell you the relevance of this topic to education or vice versa. Another thing, and I didn't put this on the chart, but when you walk into an office, look at what's on the walls. Look at, you know, if they have photographs on top of desks and stuff like that. It's amazing what you find out about somebody. I know in particular this one office we walked in, and he was interested in showing his show dogs, right, and had a dog. And so it turned out that somebody in our small group also showed dogs. So they were able to connect that way. And, you know, I mean, think about it. If you're meeting with a lot of people every single day and you have somebody who's interested in something that you're interested in as well, there's a connection there. And, oh, by the way, you look more human. Okay, and I think I already made the other thing about showing them how the issue is relevant to other issues that they care about. The second big bullet there, major bullet, is when there are too many positions on the same issue, all an elected official hears is noise. And it's kind of like white noise in the background. You know, this person's saying this, that person's saying something else, blah, 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 blah. And even in our relatively small community of people who care about registered citizens, sometimes we have that happen. And we have, I don't want to just say organization A that says a certain thing, B says something slightly different, and C says something really different. The elected official can't hear it. All they hear is noise. So what you need to tell them is you need to tell them, look, this is what we all agree upon. The citizen, you know, registered citizen community, this is what we agree upon. In California, there needs to be a tiered registry. You know, we've got people on our registry for a lifetime, and they're all being treated the same, whether it's somebody who has a non-contact, non-violent offense or somebody who has, you know, raped a dozen kids. In California, they're all being lumped together, and that's wrong because, you know, again, you have to have boiled this down almost to sound bites, as maybe sad as that sounds, to get their attention. They're used to giving sound bites, and they're used to receiving sound bites. You don't want to stop at that, but you want to actually have distilled this information for them. That's why you have a one-page point paper. And here, when you're actually talking to them, and you're speaking to them during the meeting, again, you want to have the information distilled for them. You don't want to be floundering about maybe this and maybe that, because again, it's noise to them. You have to be very precise. Okay, so talking about what happens in other states or nations, right, and when people are dealing with this issue, is very effective. And so if I can go into to California offices and say, you know what, California is one of only X number of states that has a lifetime registry for everyone, that gets their attention. It's like, well, why are we different? It's a small number. Sometimes, you know, 4, 5, or 6 out there, whatever the number is, seems to change from time to time, to say, look, California is only one of a small minority of states here that has a lifetime registry for everybody. How come in all those other states, residents feel safe and the communities are safe with the possibility of getting off the registry in X number of years? So, you know, and then we'll talk about other nations. I don't do that so much because I think that they don't listen. I mean, if we talk, for example, about Mexico and say, well, in Mexico, you know, the age of consent is less than 18. We have an age of consent of 18 in California, which is just totally crazy. But the fact is, if I say, well, Mexico has an age of consent of 12 or whatever it is, you know what, that's noise. They don't want to hear about that. But if I can say again that, wow, 46 out of 50 states have tiered registries, why is it that we only have four? I'm sorry, that we have a lifetime, four of us have lifetime registries, and to think about that. And then also, if there's somebody who already agrees with the position that we have, we tell them about it. So, for example, in our state, our California Sex Offender Management Board agrees with us that there should be a tiered registry. And they have reports. They put up reports about that. And quite often we'll take at least a partial report from the Sex Offender Management Board to make our point. Or we'll just take a few pages, an excerpt from it. Every once in a while we take a full report. But even that report that I'm thinking of is like 25 pages long, and we don't want to print out 25 pages. It's expensive. And also they're not going to read it. And, oh, and one more thing is the Sex Offender Management Board has already mailed it to the office. Whether or not they've read it is another matter. Okay, so let's talk about some basic rules about meeting with an elected official or their staff. And the next one, thank you. Be sure to make an appointment ahead of time if at all possible. And I know Jennifer was talking earlier about she found out about a committee hearing, I think it was a committee hearing, and she rushed to the state capitol to go testify. That's an exception rather than the rule. And so I'm glad that she was able to do that. But most of the time, it's possible to go ahead and make an appointment ahead of time. The primary reason for doing that is you want to meet with the right people. And again, the elected official is okay to meet with, but having the relevant staffer is more important of the two, quite frankly. Again, in California, that's the continuity. The elected official is not the continuity. It's often the staffer. Okay, and something about being on time. Again, these people have very, very busy schedules, and so the come a few minutes early, but don't come too early. And the reason is that their office space is indeed extremely limited, and so if you come 15 minutes early, there's no place often for you to sit for 15 minutes. But if you arrive 5 minutes early into the office, then you can usually stand for 5 minutes before they find a meeting room for you, if you're lucky. If you're not lucky, you could have a meeting in the hallway, and that's okay. I mean, having their attention, the hallway meeting is not going to be with an elected official, but it could be with the right staffer. Sometimes, too, in California, we end up going to the cafeteria, and again, you know, the boss might be meeting with, I don't know, General Motors or something, and the staffer that you want to meet with is not in that meeting, but is going to meet with you, and so there's no room left literally in the office, and so you take that person, or that person takes you to the cafeteria, and there are many very important meetings that happen in the cafeteria, so don't be put off by where, in fact, you end up meeting them. the last line on that chart is really important as well, and that's be polite. You know, southern states seem to have this easier, comes easier to you. Maybe I'm biased because I spent quite a few years in Texas myself, and you know, saying yes sir and yes ma'am is still appreciated, believe it or not. And you know, even sometimes when they say the most stupid things and it will come out of their mouths, you can smile and say, I respectfully disagree with you. Reasonable minds can disagree and whatever, and go on. Or sometimes it's really a big clue and cue for you to cut the meeting short, because you don't want to sit there and have a heated argument with somebody. It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Okay, the next chart there, bringing a friend is a really good idea, because while you're talking, you don't want to be taking notes. It's much better if you have somebody there taking notes while you're speaking. And when we meet in California, our best meeting is at least three people. So you have somebody like myself who is not on the registry and is not a family member, but to have somebody who is on the registry and then a family member and a third person who's a family member. And you need to arrange ahead of time who's going to take the notes during the meeting. So sometimes, you know, it might be different from meeting to meeting, but the fact is to have somebody be responsible for taking notes. Or if it's not possible for some reason, if you know everybody's talking, that right after that meeting, go somewhere where you can collect your thoughts and put them in writing. It's really important, whether it's a concept like the tiered registry is a concept, or sometimes we've had tiered registry bills, you want to know and ask during the meeting. If you're meeting with a staffer, ask, what do you think your boss thinks of this issue? Can we count on your boss for a yes vote or a no vote on this? Don't be shy. Sometimes it can be easy just to have kind of a palsy meeting and everybody's smiling and feeling good, but it's kind of like if you've ever done sales, at the end you need to close the deal. And closing the deal in our meetings is, how's your boss going to vote on this? Are you meeting with the member? How are you going to vote on this? And then if they say, well, I don't know, is there any additional information that we can provide you at this time? And follow up. It's really important to follow up with meetings, too, because quite often they will ask you for a piece of information which you won't have with you, but you can follow up and say, I'd be happy to provide you with that tomorrow, and, you know, by email or in person, you know, whatever it is. A couple more rules here. Make sure you have a business card of some sort, and that you ask for the business card of the staffer that you're meeting with. The elected official, don't ask them for the business card. You know who they are and how to get a hold of them. But if you're meeting with a staffer, you want to make sure that you have the business card of that person, because it has their contact information on it. And you can, after the meeting, you can thank them. You can thank them right there in person for meeting with you, but afterwards to send them a thank you email. And if you really want to get somebody's attention, send them a good old-fashioned thank you note. I mean, there are so few of those given these days. They really, really get somebody's attention. And when we have votes by committees on bills and they vote our way, we send the members letters afterwards thanking them for their vote. And again, it's something that's very rarely done, and it really does get people's attention. So I think at this point, I'm just going to thank you all for listening to me, and to ask if you have any questions. I'm happy to answer whatever questions I can. I'm happy to give you more concrete examples about bills that we've worked on this year. I will tell you, in general, it's much easier to stop a bill than it is to get a bill passed. And I think I'll leave it right at that note and ask if there's any questions.
All right. Thank you very much, Janice. This is we appreciate that. And, we're going to need to. Jennifer, I just want to let you know, we don't want to have everybody seeing that if we can. There we go. So at this point, we no longer have the visual, but we still have our audio going. So if you have a question for Janice, you'd press *6. And this time, it's not just raising your hand. We'll take them in the order that they come in, and you can address Janice or either of us as well.
Okay. I'm just going to go down the line. We have, I'm either going to have to say a phone number or just a first name. Tammy?
I don't have a question. Thank you.
Okay. Next, we have the phone number I see is 310-402.
Jennifer, I suggest we not give out entire, and you
okay.
can just say, if you should just be able to say next because the person will know who they
will
are.
Will they know? Okay.
Yeah.
Next.
Yeah, because it says, you can now ask this question.
Okay.
Hey, this is Philip in West Virginia, Jazz. Two questions. One, when you set up an appointment, should you make it clear what the appointment's about and what the position is? Or
yes,
should you
absolutely.
Be more discreet? Yes, yes?
No, yes. And so, for example, if it's a specific bill, say we want to come speak about Senate Bill, you know, Humpty Frump. And
right.
And who's the staffer who handles that issue? That's who we want
okay.
to meet with.
And have you ever, I know you were talking about notes, and I know how important that is. Have you ever asked to record a meeting?
I don't do that. Most people are not comfortable with recorded meetings.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And I think that they're less candid during a recorded meeting. I do.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Those are my two questions.
Janice, I did want to, that reminded me before we move on to the next question, I did want to mention something. You talked about your perfect trifecta. Just as a counterpoint, here in Maryland, we're definitely not that, it's definitely true that you can get a little bit of time from that legislator, and knowing the staff is critical, but it is also very possible that the person that answered the phone is the staffer. The senators,
okay.
the senators actually, some of them might have a separate secretarial person, but definitely our delegates, which is what we call, what you call the assembly, our delegates, their staffers are it. So you generally, so just that, again, it's mainly just to bring up that it can be very different. I would agree, it's definitely key. It's critical to know those staffers and to, you know, because they have their lawmakers' ears. And you may not catch that lawmaker for more than a few minutes, but you might get a longer chunk of time with that staff person. And if that staff person really catches what you're after and gets that ask, that can make a huge difference. But I just did want to insert definitely in my state, we don't have secretaries. Maybe the entire committee has a couple of secretaries, but not the individuals. All right, so thanks. So, okay, Jennifer, who's next?
Hi, Janice. This is Esther from Florida. I was going to ask you a question. If, for example, you want to send information or any kind of things that you want to mail to any kind of legislator, what is the most effective way to do it? Is email better? Is snail mail? Do you send it right to the legislator or to his secretary? What's the most effective thing?
You know, it does depend a lot on your state. In California, for some reason, they like things to be sent by fax, and I hate sending things by fax. I'm sure because one reason, I don't even have a fax machine in my office, so I have to go down the street and send it by fax, but that's the way they like it. Many of them, I think it makes a big impact if you send something by Federal Express. You know, people understand that it costs money to send something that way, and therefore, you know, I think you get their attention a little bit more if, in fact, you pay that extra amount of money. Now, you certainly can't do that for everything and garden variety type of thing, but the fact is, that, again, if you can afford it and it's something that you really want to get their attention on, I would do it that way. Hand carrying something, you know, certainly makes sense. You know, I'm 5.5 hours away from our state capitol, and we don't have anybody who's, you know, on the ground. I guess our closest person reliably is, you know, 1.5 hours away. So it's not something, you know, that we can easily do, but every once in a while when we're there in mass, we will, in fact, we'll do that. We'll go, like, door-to-door and hand things out. And I know one time we did that. It was, I think it was the day before a vote. And so we had a flyer, and we were, you know, distributing them out to the offices one by one.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Who's next? Are you there? Whoever's next? Guess we'll move on to the next one then.
I don't see anybody else in the queue, so.
Oh, okay. Does anybody else have a question for Janice that pressed *6 and wants to get in line?
Well, maybe I would like to expand on something, Brenda, and,
sure.
And that is when I made that comment about it's easier to stop a bill than it is to get a bill passed.
Sure.
I think that people need to understand that because, you know, when bills are being considered, they have to go through usually at least one committee. And there's usually two houses. So every time it goes to a different committee, that's an opportunity to stop it. And for those of you who were on the phone early, Jennifer talked about her experience in Kentucky and how her speaking out on a bill basically stopped it. I think it stopped it from being passed. And we've had that experience certainly this year. And, you know, what we are doing is we're disseminating information to our community, to our members, and California, by the way, we have over 100,000 people who are in the registry. And if they would all speak out at the same time saying the same thing, it would be a huge roar. But, of course, that hasn't happened yet, but we keep open to that possibility. But the fact is that we tell people by email, we tell people on our website that there's going to be a hearing on a certain date at a certain time and to please come. And it's amazing to me with having over 100,000 people on the registry what a big difference 15 people will make. And so we have had hearings where we've had 15 people who opposed a bill. And in California, again, what happens at the committee, usually they only let 2 or 3 people speak for 3 minutes. And keep that in mind, at 3 minutes we're talking about, not 15, not 30 minutes. We get to speak for 3 minutes. And then after that, they say, well, who else is opposed? And there's usually a microphone on a stand in the corridor where people can come up and say, this is my name, either what organization they're from or what town they're from, and that they oppose the bill. Not why, but that they oppose it. And the very first bill that we opposed this year was an assembly bill. The fact is that 15 people, or maybe it was 12 on that one, got up and spoke against it. And even though the committee approved the bill unanimously, the author of the bill withdrew it the very next day. And he said he had no idea that people would be opposed to that bill. And, mm-hmm. I mean, we were shocked. We were truly shocked that he did that. And we were so grateful, too, and it encouraged us, certainly, to continue doing that. So, in fact, we opposed 3 bills this year, and each time we showed up to oppose a bill, our numbers got larger. And I think the last time we had about 20, 21 people who showed up and spoke against it. And, again, if you think about the percentage, if there's 100,000 people on the registry and only 20 people show up, it's a very small percentage. But the fact is, when we had 15 people show up to oppose a bill, we were told this is the greatest number of people who have ever spoken up in opposition to a bill.
Wow.
And
that's
and
impressive.
That got our that got our attention. It got their attention, and they voted down the bill. because so many people got up to speak against it. And I guess one of the things that I could expand upon, too, is how necessary it is to find other organizations that will support your bill. ACLU is the golden nugget, right? If you can get ACLU to speak against your bill, it's usually a very positive thing. Now, I come from a liberal state, so I guess I can say that here. Maybe in Nebraska that's not so, or some other, you know, more conservative state. But in California, if you can get the ACLU to join your cause, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win automatically, but it gives more credibility to your cause. And so, this year we've been very fortunate in attracting ACLU's attention, and not just a Me Too at the microphone, but they've been willing to go up there in the first 3 minutes and testify. And it was pretty funny, the ACLU got a new lobbyist this year. The old one retired, and I didn't even know who the new lobbyist was. And as I was walking to the microphone, I practically got run over by this woman who just, you know, had to go and testify. And was like, okay. So I took a half a step backwards and let her through. And I'm so glad that I did, because it turned out she was the new ACLU lobbyist. And she really had a great presentation to make about that bill, and she was on the same side that we were. So ACLU is certainly, you know, a slam dunk for anybody, I'd say, certainly in a liberal state. But there's other organizations out there, too. And, you know, we even have a victims' rights group that agrees with us on most things, including the tiered registry bill. And they haven't been willing to testify. Well, maybe one time they testified in support of our organization. But we've also found there's a group of housing advocates, and, you know, they really care about our issue because they see how, you know, it's so difficult for anybody on the registry in our state to find housing, you know, unless they have a wealthy family member or whatever that will, you know, support them. But it's sometimes, you know, they come from sources you might not expect. Another one that we do expect is California Attorneys for Criminal Justice. And, you know, they were the only organization, really, to speak out against Jessica's Law. We weren't in existence at that time. And Jessica's Law in our state is the law that says you can't live within 2,000 feet of a school or a park. It's been modified greatly by our state Supreme Court a few months ago in a decision that came out. And you know, keep repeating your message. Testify anytime you get an opportunity to at committee hearings. We don't really get a chance to testify, you know, before the full legislature. And I think in other states that's possible, but not in our state. It's just our state's too big, and there's too many committees and too many bills going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would chime in on just to reinforce what you said, Janice, that it definitely, it can make a difference. I mean, if you think about it a minute, you know, Jennifer showed up really almost on a whim. She was the only one to show up, and yet her voice was able to make a difference because she was there and people were hearing that. You know, your example of, you know, just only a couple of three people were able to speak and only for 3 minutes. And I can tell you, 3 minutes flies. So you really, you talk about those bullet points, boy, you got to have them because you don't have any longer
to talk.
And in our state, anybody who signs up pretty much usually gets their 3 minutes. So you could have quite a few, but not everybody is comfortable speaking. But what we've encouraged in our state is similar to what you've done when it's an important bill that we're trying to kill. You know, we say show up to support those who are speaking, and mm-hmm. so we would have, you know, we might have 3 or 4 or 5 people that actually had a testimony to give, mm-hmm. but we would have another 5-10 people in the room, and I know, because I've seen it also in other bills, that makes a huge difference. And at some point, one of us, usually me, would say, and I just want to ask those who are here in support of our viewpoint to stand up. Mm-hmm. And you know, and so then, you know, and you know, and you see the lawmakers are going, oh, wow. you know, okay, so this is an important issue, and it really does make a difference that they will comment on it. And oftentimes, wow, we had no idea, and it can really make a difference in the outcome. So I just did want
absolutely.
To add that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And another thing that we've done, we've had people sometimes wear buttons, large buttons, mm-hmm. and when we do that, or stickers, when we do it, we make them look as patriotic as possible. We use red, white, and blue a whole lot because we consider ourselves the patriots. We're here to protect the Constitution.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I mean, I personally have a copy of the Constitution in my purse. I can whip it out in a moment's notice and I often wave it at people. And we're having major problems with one city in Los Angeles County. And this last time, we brought them a huge version of the Constitution in a plastic tube, and you know I got to wave that at them first, and then hand it to them, and say, "Here, just in case you don't have a copy, here's a copy of the Constitution. You might want to read it." you know, I mean, just different things that you can do. And, you know, I was mostly talking about going to our state capitol and lobbying, but it's done at every level. And so we've gone to testify before city council meetings as well. And when, you know, we had a whole bunch of cities that were passing these awful presence restrictions, we went and testified in front of city councils, and it's similar actually to the state legislature. And you know, we didn't have time to meet with anybody because usually they popped up like these mushrooms on a forest overnight. But the fact is, you know, we'd send a letter and say this is unconstitutional for these seven reasons, and oh, by the way, and then we'd show up to testify. And I personally have driven 4 hours times two, so I'm doing 8 hours so I could testify for 3 minutes, and found it to be worthwhile. And sometimes we were able to change their opinion. Most of the time we weren't, and the city councils pass these terrible, you know, laws anyway. But I tell you what, when they did, and I felt much better about suing them because I felt like I had given them an opportunity to do the right thing, and they chose to do something. They chose to do the wrong thing.
Definitely.
They were noticed.
Mm, so yeah, that's right. You're on record.
We've got four people in queue now, so I'm going to hit the next.
All right.
Oh, hi. It's Cindy from Connecticut.
Hi, Cindy.
You know, I spoke before the meeting a bit about this committee to study sex offenders, and they've got sort of 2 years and 3 months to get the job done. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to be an impartial committee. And we've got people like from the ACLU on it, Connecticut Coalition for Homelessness. There's the state prosecutor's office is there. The public defender is there. The victim's advocate. You know, it's a wide array of people. And from the first meeting, I can already see the people where they're lining up, who is for smart reform, who is opposed to it. I'm not seeing many in the middle at the moment. But I guess at this point, I should be cultivating friends. Like, the people that I know are pro-reform and support, you know, our message, our content. I've introduced myself to some of them. I've called them. I followed up with an email. But I'm wondering about all of these people. Like, is there any reason that I should talk to the state prosecutor or the judge, or...
Well, if I were you, I'd try to meet with all of them if they would meet with you. Chances are they're not going to be willing to meet with you, but the fact is, you know, I believe in knowing your enemies, quite frankly, and one way to get to know them is to meet with them. And remember, like I said, you walk into their office and you see something on the wall about dog shows, and, oh, you have an interest in dog shows. I mean, if you don't have an interest, don't bring it up. Don't try to fake it either. But, you know, you might see that they have their pictures of their grandkids or something like that. Mm-hmm. Oh, I have grandkids, too. How old are yours? You know,
so I try to meet with all of them and get to know them.
if you can. But you know, and again, know that you're going to get varying degrees of reception. And the people who agree with you on the substance, those are people definitely to cultivate, because they can actually leak information to you. Or they're the people who are more likely to ask you what your point of view is. You want to make sure that your point of view gets represented in those meetings, if at all possible.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Next.
Yeah. Is that me now?
Yep.
Yes.
Janice, I've told you before, you're my hero. I love to hear how you get in the faces of these people in California. Do you find in your dealing with the legislators that they're just as big of pinheads as the ones that are on these city councils that you, or do you find them more receptive and more open-minded?
Are you comparing the city council members to the state legislators? Is that what you're doing?
Yes. Do you find the state legislators to be just as big of pinheads as these city council members, or are they more open-minded generally?
I think it's all, they're all, you can find all kinds in the state capitol. So some people get elected to, you know, to a state office because they're so strident, and other people because they're more middle of the road. And so, for example, we had somebody on the Carson City Council, and Carson is that one city in Los Angeles County that we're having so much trouble with. And so, you know, he did, as a member of the city council, got elected to the state assembly because there was a vacancy. And, you know, he was very strident when he was on the city council. He does seem to have mellowed a little bit. And, in fact, Brenda, he came up to us at the booth at the NCSL conference. And so that was pretty amazing that he did that. And so he said, well, hey, come meet with me one-on-one if you want to. And anyway, I'll be doing that. So I can't say that. I think people at the lowest level of governments, sometimes they have kind of a tunnel vision, and so they don't see beyond their own city boundaries, right? And so, gosh gee whiz, if they can kick sex offenders out of their town, then they're only too happy to do that, even though, you know, when they go to state office, well, maybe they represent 10 towns now, right? So kicking a sex offender out of one town is not going to meet anybody's needs, you know, their needs. And so then they do get often a broader view of when they go to the state legislature.
Okay. Yeah, I live in Oregon. I got off the registry this month. So
congratulations.
But it's funny, Oregon's got the highest registry per capita, even though they do have sort of a way off. Washington, I think it's automatic to get off. But anyway, I don't need to bore you with that stuff, but it was
found that out, the map that we had up at the NCSL conference, and I was surprised that Oregon has the highest per capita numbers.
My attorney said it was because of Measure 11 up here, which you guys have three strikes laws, we've got a one strike law. And so a lot of people plead out because the consequences are so high, even though you might have someone who's innocent. The consequences of that first strike is just terrible. The 75 months in prison, mandatory minimum. So
75 months?
Yeah. Well, let's see. First-degree sex abuse, I think, is 6 years and three months or something like that. So, yeah, they've got a very heavy, that's the minimum. So, you know, that was passed in 95. Anyway, I hope that you guys get some changes there, because I kind of stay away from California because it just seems kind of kooky down there with all the way they have the way they have their, you know, I had a felony from felon in possession of firearms because I thought it had been reduced to a misdemeanor, bought some firearms with the approval of the state police, and then a SWAT team comes through my door. So they're kind of stupid up here, but at least they're not. But down there, I mean, so I got two felonies, so I don't want to go down there and get caught with a third felony accidentally. So,
okay.
Yeah, and my concern for you actually is if you come to California, they could require you to be on our registry the rest of your life. So, talk to me offline about your specifics, but that would be a concern I have for you.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good night.
You're welcome. You too.
Okay. I think we had at least one more. Are you still there?
Yeah, Janice and Brenda. This is Philip again in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. When you go to testify, just in generalities, what's the ratio that you've noticed between people who are testifying? You know, you guys are testifying in opposition.
Mm.
Are there a lot of people testifying in support?
The ones that I've done, it could vary widely. The year of the sex offender for us that was in 2010 when they were passing the Adam Walsh Act. Even though we had quite a few people, we were way outnumbered. It didn't balance out. On general years, though, sometimes we have more, and sometimes it's about even. A lot of it just depends on the public interest in that particular bill.
Right.
Yeah, it can vary.
We've had a really different experience in California where we have overwhelmed them. So when we had 15 people, I remember we had 15 people speaking in opposition and there were 3 people speaking in support. And the only time that having said that, there was a bill in 2014 and it was such a simple bill. It's just pathetic that this happened to it. But it was going to give judges more discretion when it came to sex offenses about what their sentences would be, not about whether or not they'd be required to register. That wasn't even, at issue. But what happened was that they brought a whole school bus of kids to the floor of the assembly, and when the bill was being brought up for consideration, and it just scared the stuffing out of the members who were voting, and they voted down the bill. And it was totally, took that legislator by surprise. He was relatively new. He botched it. He blew it. He just, got so rattled that it went down in flames.
It's too bad. Yeah, things like that can happen, certainly, where, basically just what will happen is some group or couple of groups it'll capture their, they'll hear about it and they'll call out their troops, But I think equally important, at least in my state, equally important is what the message is. For instance, that year in 2010, we were outnumbered. And to some extent, we lost just because, there was just no way we were going to stop the Adam Walsh Act that year. I mean, not when you have 5 different versions of it going through. So yeah. We knew that was already doomed. But just in terms of numbers, it isn't the only thing. I you have a bunch of people getting up there telling their sad stories, but if a couple of 3 people get up there and really stay on point and really hit home as to what the risks are, is it where it's going to be violating the Constitution, where it's going to be violating human rights, where it's going to be breaking the budget. And you point those things out. You say, I understand the victims have their, their concerns, and I'm really sorry for what happened to them, but let me tell you what's going to happen with this bill. and that can have much more of an impact.
Thanks, Brenda. We have a bill right now that's just being crammed through the state legislature, and it's come in, at the tail end of the session. And we have a process, believe it or not, it's called the GUT, G-U-T, and Andy amend process. So basically they took a bill on a different subject, they ripped the guts out of it, and then they stuffed in some new language, okay? And it has to do with disclosing internet identifiers, which we had a proposition that said this was going to be required. ACLU, bless their souls, they filed a lawsuit, stopped that from ever happening. And so then the same people who wanted that are now, trying this to get a bill in. And what we did in fighting it, and it's not over yet because I don't know how this is going to end, but the newest approach that I've taken in going to the leadership of our two branches, the Assembly and the Senate, is sending them and say, look, this bill is, you know, this is a very important and very complex issue, and it hasn't been given sufficient time for reasonable consideration. So rather than fight the substance of it, just fight the process of it. When it came to the public safety committees, it's the substance. But with the two leaders, the Senate President and the Speaker of the Assembly, I'm going after process and saying, look, this is being crammed through, you know, this bill didn't even exist until it was like the middle of June, for heaven's sakes, and now these committees, you know, these certain things are happening. And it was pathetic when it went to our Senate Public Safety Committee hearing. It was the very last day that they were considering bills, and they passed the bill with with only the author's promise that it would be amended. They didn't have language to amend it. They said, I'm going to amend it. And I was outraged by that. And part of it's because I'm a former congressional staffer and know that when we dealt in Congress with amending a bill, man, you had your specific amendment there, and people discussed very, you know, to the details of any amendment. And here they were basically writing this author a blank check. So we certainly jumped up and down about that. And again, I don't know if we're going to be successful or not in stopping the bill, but certainly our voices have been heard on this. And the bill's author has amended the bill, and he has made it narrowed the application. We still think that what he's doing is unconstitutional, but at least there has been.
Yeah, without the language there, you don't even have anything to argue against. He may narrow it.
He subsequently did amend it. So when it went to the next committee, which was this week, there was an amendment there. Yeah. But we've said that doesn't go far enough. That amendment doesn't go far enough. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe one thing that people need to understand, too, that the legislative process does sometimes, most of the time, seem really slow, and I think that comment was made early on, and I agree, and most of the time I'm unhappy about that, but every once in a while I am happy about it. And so this bill, you know, that we're the Internet Identifier bill right now, it's really upsetting that it's going through so quickly and that, you know, it could become law in 3 months' time. And again, the upsetting part of it is that people are cramming this thing through, and, oh, by the way, you know, the sponsor of the bill, so, you know, you've got people who want legislation to be passed who are not elected officials, and, oh, sometimes it seems that, you know, the wealthier they are, the faster their bills get through, and so we have some Facebook gazillionaire here, his name is Chris Kelly, who's basically the sponsor of the bill, and it's just going through at breakneck speed, and we're trying to, you know, we're trying to stop it. We're trying to put the brakes on.
Yeah, that's going to be a problem. Okay, I think we do still have another person or two. Is that right, Jennifer?
Yeah, there's three.
Okay.
Hi, Janice. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I had a question about the statistics you reported earlier, the 1.8% of paroled registered citizens recidivating. Do you have a citation for that, where that's from?
Yes, it's from the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, and I don't know how best I can send it to somebody, and then it can be distributed to everybody.
Would that be possible, Brenda, if they send it to you?
Yeah, you can send it to Jennifer, and then we could post it, I guess, you know, just at least for a while. It's a big old study, right? That's the big old 100-pager.
Yeah.
That you were talking about.
But I can tell you, it's on page 26 in the pie chart.
There you go.
And I know that off the top of my head.
Yeah. And this was a study that they did, you know, on parolees there in California. But still useful, I think, in other contexts. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we have the U.S. Department of Justice study that says 5.3% rate of reoffense.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so but the 1.8% is California. It's a report that's done every year, or at least was done on an annual basis. It's kind of weird since we've been quoting it. All of a sudden, it appears that they stopped doing it. But I'm still quoting it, and it's a 2014 date, so it's still current enough.
Well, that's good. That's good. Okay.
We got two more.
All right.
Hi, this is Michael from Indiana.
Hi, Michael.
Michael.
Hey. It's kind of a recruiting question, I guess, in terms of membership. But I guess how do you prepare your members or find those that are ones that you think would be best to approach different legislators or work with you in the process of presenting to them?
Well, we announced to our constituency through our website that we're going to do this. We're going to go to the state capitol, and we invite people to come join us. And, for example, in January of this year, we had about 25 people who showed up, and, you know, we prepared in advance the meetings, the materials. You know, we did all that ahead of time, and basically they had to show up. And we did our best. It actually sometimes can get unwieldy because these offices are not very big. And so if you show up with five people, or much less eight or ten, then they're really, they're really stressed trying to find a place for the meeting. But anyway, yeah, communicating with them that way. We also have monthly meetings in California throughout the state. And whenever we have a monthly meeting, what we do is we collect people's email addresses from anybody who has one and that's willing to share it. And so we can then, you know, send out email blasts that way as well. Because as we all know, postage is pretty darn expensive.
Right.
Yeah. We do something very similar in Maryland when we have something coming up. Couple of times we've actually had kind of training during one of our monthly meetings, but the other thing that we will do is prior to a big testimony day, and oftentimes there'll be a couple of bills heard on the same day here, we can plan a little better. We'll get people together in the morning and then have a little training session right there on the spot. And divide up and maybe try to hit a few offices. Sometimes it's cold and sometimes we call ahead. Again, it just depends on the timing, whether we can do that. And we usually will break up into twos. Rarely it'll be a three, doing something similar. I'll have to add that note-taking bit, Janice. That's a good tip there. But then a part of the training that we do is usually aimed at the testimony. Because at least in our legislature, sometimes the actual lawmakers will, if they latch on to the fact that a person who's speaking is a registrant, they'll start asking personal questions, as we will call them. And so part of what I will do, you know, is to, everybody's come with a statement. I encourage them to write it ahead of time because 3 minutes goes by fast. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go, So they come with their little statement, and I say, you know, if they start asking you questions, you know, you need to deflect because it's about you in the sense that the bill is going to affect you, but just because you're a registrant. If they start saying, what was your crime? What was your, I mean, you say, with all due respect, that's not an issue here. You know, I'm here to talk about the damage to this bill, such as, and
yeah,
just
that's really important, Brenda, because whether it's the legislature or it's the media, don't ever talk about your offense because that's all they want to talk about. That's all they want to talk about.
Yep, and even if you were falsely accused, just say, look, I'm on the registry due to a conviction. But that's not the issue here. The issue here is how registrants are being treated, about the concern about the bill. You know, you acknowledge that you're a registrant if you are, or a registrant spouse if you are. And it'll happen sometimes even with spouses. It's not as often, but I've had one or two that mentioned they were a spouse and the problems that registration, that these changes in the laws were going to impact on their lives. And what did they get back as a question? Are you afraid to be living with him? You know, and the response was, no, I'm more worried about my neighbors. You know, but the trick is to have, you know, so we teach them that. I didn't want to get onto the training here, but, you know, but is to have that response ready to go. Yeah.
And when it's really important, too, that when there are newly elected officials, and they do come in batches,
yes.
get to them early, you know, before their minds are polluted by others. And so, you know, when I said we met in January and there were about 25 of us, well, guess what? We spent the first half a day training them. So we didn't send anybody in without training. And
yeah.
we went over our point paper and said, okay, these are the points. And by the way, in each person, each team had a team leader, somebody who had experience already in lobbying.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's important. If for no other reason to know where the bathrooms are. But, you know, I mean, they're in the cafeteria and those kinds of things. So so that's really important. And if you're doing it, there's nobody there to teach you. If there's not anybody who's experienced, then you know, do it, just just hold hands and sing Kumbaya, just know not to take it personally, no matter what is said to you.
Negative
things can be said, and you know, I just, when that happens, I just think to myself, that's an uneducated person speaking. They just don't understand.
It definitely helped me. I know my first year, even though both of us were going in pretty much cold, you know, no experience, to go in with somebody. Because at least then, if one of us kind of faltered and we weren't quite sure what we wanted to say, the other one would pick up, you know, could kind of pick up. It worked nice as a team that way. If you've got one that's more experienced, the other one, you know, it's a little easier for the other one to kind of sit back and listen and do the note-taking or just chime in when asked or something. But yeah, it's handy, even if you're both totally new at it, to have that extra person there, because then you just sort of got somebody to fall back on. You know, you're going, oh dang, what's that word I'm looking for? Right, recidivism, you know, just that kind of thing. You know, so you've got somebody to back up. So.
Surely, if nothing else.
Yeah, really.
You know, you can both cry on each other's shoulders when it's over. And
yeah,
go,
when
oh
it's
gosh,
all done. Oh
believe.
God, how could I possibly forget to have said whatever it is? Yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. Okay.
All right. Well, thanks.
Sure.
And I want to say, too, that, you know, when we started doing this, there were some people who kind of recoiled at the fact that we had a registered citizen in the room with them. And they're like, oh, my God, you know, you brought you know, a sex offender into my office type of thing. And we saw that. We really saw that attitude change because we, you know, it's like, oh, well, gosh, gee whiz, there are only, you know, no green heads, no purple tails. You know, this is another human being who's had an unfortunate experience, and you know, that certainly isn't universal, but it's really helped for them to actually see somebody, meet somebody who's on the registry, and we even had that happen with our sex offender management board. I mean, we've got 17 individuals who've been selected by the governor or the state legislature or whatever, you know, appointed to this board, supposed to be the experts on sex offense in the state of California. And they asked me to come make a presentation. I was happy to do it. And, you know, before I did it, I had three or four registered citizens with me, and I introduced them. Again, this is the Sex Offender Management Board. And after I finished my presentation, they're, you know, very polite, thank you so much. And then they said, can we talk to them? It was like, well, it's up to them if they want to talk to you. And so, you know, sure enough, everybody was willing to do it. And afterwards, I found out, I had a couple of board members tell me they had never actually had a conversation with a sex offender before. And that scared the stuffing right out of me. It's like, wait a minute, we've got people in our state who are responsible for setting the policy, and they've never even spoken to a sex offender before. I was appalled. I was just appalled.
That
but
is
anyway,
why we have been at every single. Yeah, we have. That's why we have been at every single sex offender advisory board meeting, except the very, very first. Sometimes it's been just me, but most of the time it's been me and at least one registrant, and we just sit there. Most of the time we don't say anything, but we are there, and they know that we are there, taking notes, listening to what they say.
So, oh, my goodness, they're accountable to someone.
We are accountable, yep. And so they know there are registrants in the room listening to what they're saying about registrants and sentencing. And, you know, anyway, sorry. Are we done, Jennifer, or is there anybody else left in the queue?
Actually, we've got four more in the queue.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, we are coming up on about an hour and a half. So are you okay staying on for a little bit longer, Janice?
I am.
Okay. We'll take those. Let's not take any more, though, please, and try to keep your questions short. And I guess, Janice, you and I need to quit going on quite at length.
Hearing more stories.
Yes.
I think they're valuable. And,
they have
and,
been.
You know, we'll get more questions. And I think the things that we're saying are prompting those questions.
I think they are, too. Yes. Okay. So who's next?
All right. So I clicked on the next one.
Mm-hmm. Hi, this is Cheryl.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. I'm asking a question about being a constituent. I am not really a constituent in the states that matter to me. I've got two sons in prison, one in Iowa and one in Colorado. Now, Colorado has a very active group, so I don't really feel like I need to ask any questions about that. But about Iowa, and both of my sons have long sentences, so it may be a while before they even get out. But I'm still very interested in all these things. How do I approach legislators when I'm not a constituent, but my sons are because they will be, you know, in their state when they get out of prison?
Then I'd say I'm here representing my sons who are live in this state. And, you know, I mean, they are, and by the way, when they get out of prison, they're going to have to live here. I don't know. In California, that's true for some period of time, then they have to live, like, in the county where their offense occurred. In that respect, you are a constituent.
Or a representative of a constituent, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they can't be there in person, right?
No. Okay, well, thank you.
Sure.
You're welcome.
All right, next.
Hi, Janice, and this is Esther again. The reason that I asked you about sending out letters to different legislators is I don't know, I emailed this to RSOL about this new article that came out with Ira Bellman.
She's on our board of directors, by the way.
Oh, okay. How the Supreme Court used made-up statistics to expand the sex offender registries. This is what we're trying to get out to legislators and anybody else who might be, who would read it. And that's one of the reasons that I asked you what the most effective way would be to get this over to lawmakers or legislators or whoever we can reach out to. And I was just wanting to get your idea.
Can carry it, and I'll tell you why, because like our Sex Offender Management Board, the last couple of years, they've been putting out great reports saying exactly the things that we've been saying, but there are state policy experts, right? So we want to make sure that people know this, and what we found out was that the board itself mailed copies of their reports, you know, to the offices. Well, guess what? Very few of them got read. They didn't get read until we hand-carried them into the offices. And, I mean, we don't represent the Sex Offender Management Board, and we're very, you know, we make sure we tell them that we're not. But the fact is that we needed that information to be, to make sure they knew about it. And it turns out we've been, like, the biggest marketers of our marketeers for our Sex Offender Management Board because we had offices that didn't even know that they existed. And it's like, oh, my gosh. So here we are. We're educating staff, that there is a board, number one. And number two, then this is what they have to say. So I think something like that. And, you know, again, it takes a lot of time, a lot of shoe leather, and take some money too, to make copies, to, you know, drive there and then, you know, and go office by office. I understand that, but that's the biggest bang you'll get for your buck.
Right.
If you can't do that for some reason, then I would say go to the trouble of calling your offices and say who in the office is handling this issue, okay, and address the envelope to that person. So rather than office of, you know, congressman blah, 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 or, you know, state senator blah, 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 you want to send it to an individual. It's much more likely to get to the right person. Otherwise,
yeah, that's
if it just
what
goes
I
to the
to
office,
know.
Yeah, definitely
right.
to a human. Now, another thing, Janice, you did mention at the beginning, you know, that's a lengthy report, but that nice, there's kind of like almost like an abstract that came out. That's fairly short.
Yes.
You don't want to send them.
Well, we created an abstract.
yeah. So, I mean, it seems to me, again, that shorter is better in this case where you create an abstract or provide one if they already have one and say, here's where you can get the full report, but we wanted to make sure you saw this short thing. Because it's really critical. You don't need to send a 40-page document
report
to everybody. Yeah.
The abstract or the executive summary and just say, hey, this is really important information and we wanted to make sure that you saw it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Last one.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, this is Lawrence. I have two very brief questions. My first question is there any contact in the state of Delaware? I live in Maryland and have lived here for the majority of my life, but I'm dealing with the issue that transpired in Delaware in the year of 2004, and I'm just trying to find out if there is any contact person related to RSOL type advocacy in Delaware. That's my first question. And my second brief question is, have the date and tentative location been established for the next conference, a national conference?
I can answer both of those pretty easily at this point. The first one, no. Don't have anybody in Delaware at the moment.
Okay.
Sorry. And then second one, again, no. The default will probably be back in Texas if we don't come up with anything else, but there's been nothing decided at this point. So,
great. Thanks for your response.
Yeah. Sorry. No better news, but that's where we're at.
Okay.
Well, thanks.
Thank you.
With that, I think we can end the recording in just a second anyway. But anyway, thanks to everyone for being on the call. And thank you, Janice, for being here with us. I think we've covered a whole lot of territory, and hopefully people will get a whole lot out of it. So,
thank you, Brenda.
Thank you very much. And Jennifer, we can end the recording at this point. And everybody have a real...